This show furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervy and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervy, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. And today, as usual, on this beautiful Sunday afternoon, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. And here with me, always with a smile on her face, is Carrie Kasem, looking spiffy today,
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, last week it was something about my lasered off face and how awful
I
looked.
Oh, you looked awful.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, she did. She does. You get this work done on your face all the time. And
I
you
do.
Come into studio and, you know, I look at you, I almost want to throw up. But
yeah,
today.
Thank you.
Today
thank
you look good.
Yeah.
And
that's
I would
a compliment.
Say, I would say I would love to hug you, but I won't. Listening to the news and hearing all this.
You can't might even, sue you.
Yeah, you would. After 5 years. Working together, I'm sure you would say that I hugged you inappropriately, so I am just not going to do anything. I'm just going to look at you.
You touched the back of my head.
I will not touch anything on your body, especially since your boyfriend is sitting right next to you. I wouldn't dare. You know, it's interesting. We have a really great show for you today, and what is interesting about it is that I had gone all over to find the best Cuban cigars, some amazing fountain pens that I wanted to give to our guest today in studio. And I had it all planned out. Here I am. I'm going to give it to him. And then I was reading a little bit about him. And he says that he doesn't like to have his guests in studio when he speaks to them, when he's interviewing them, because he doesn't want to form a bond with them. He wants to be able to debate, to discuss without any problems with credibility. And I kind of understand that. So as soon as I read that, I'm saying, we can't have him in studio. We can't have him on the phone.
Yeah, but now we don't.
We have to have a heart to heart with him.
But we want a picture with him. That's the most important thing. Social media.
If you want a picture with him, you just go call him up and say, I want a picture. But we got to have a real interview a la his style, without being friends, without bonding, without knowing, you know, anything more than just getting to the discussion, getting to the talk. And who we're talking about, he's been a broadcaster in LA since 1982. In fact, started right here on KBC. Can you believe that?
I know.
Yeah, he had a great show Sunday night. There's a lot of commonalities. His father actually was born on the same day as my father, so I'm sure he's a great
and
man.
And his parents, I think both of them almost lived to 100 years old.
Well, not 100, but into their 90s.
Almost,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. That's what almost means.
that's what it means. He's got a wildly popular, nationally syndicated show, which was started in 1999. And, you know, there's about 400 affiliates that carry it now. It's live. 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Pacific time, and on KRLA. Shouldn't say that, but I just did. You know, he has been on so many shows: Larry King Live, Early Show on CBS, Today Show, O'Reilly Factor, Hardball, Hannity and Combs, Dennis Miller Show. All through the years, he's engaged in interfaith dialogue with Catholics at the Vatican, Muslims at the Persian Gulf, Hindus in India, and Protestants at Christian seminaries throughout America, and of course, in penguins in the Antarctica. We can't forget
That's the most precious.
And he collects pens and cigars. That's why I was going to have
know,
him here.
I remember that. You were asking our producer about cigars.
Cigars, but you don't collect cigars, you smoke them. His writings have appeared in publications such as Commentary, The Weekly Standard, Wall Street Journal, and the LA Times.
You know what, Alan?
What?
People are saying, who is this guy?
You know, I don't have to say who it is. They're guessing, because the next thing I will say will tell everyone who he is, the founder of Prager University, and Prager University has over 1 billion views per year, and a lot of them by people under 35, which is really important to talk about. He's been a wildly successful author. He has a number of books, like Happiness is a Serious Problem, and we got to find out about that. And his most recent book, The Rational Bible, Exodus Edition. So that's something. He has done so much over many years. The PragerU has been very successful. The Ultimate Issue Hour, the Happiness Hour, the Male-Female Hour. And we're talking about, of course, Dennis Prager. Dennis Prager, welcome to Gervie's Law.
I think that this was the most enjoyable introduction in my entire public life.
Well, Dennis, I forgot one thing, and I'm glad that you enjoyed it in your public life. And he didn't pay us for it. We just said, but did you hear his voice? He has the calmest voice in America, known as the calmest voice in America. And here he is with Alan Gervie and Carrie Kasem, who definitely do not have calm voices. So that's something to say. But
you guys are very funny. By the way, I just want to know, do I still get the fountain pen?
Yes. We will send it to you.
If
you
If
you give a picture with Carrie Kasem, you get the fountain pen.
Yes.
That's all she wants.
Well, how are we going to do that? We're going to superimpose my face.
Why don't you come to visit my show and deliver it?
Perfect. That'd be great. Then I will do that. You will see me there.
Yeah, she gets around, and she is a sight to behold, that's for sure. But I got to tell you, Dennis, after all of that, everything that I say, a lot of times when I ask people, and we've had so many people on, and we've had some of your buddies on, like Alan Dershowitz a number of times, Michael Medved, Larry Elder, a lot of these people, and I say, what are you most proud of? With you, Dennis, I don't want to say, what are you most proud of after all that? I want to ask, what makes you most happy?
Well, you know, that's a very tough question. Very rarely am I asked a question that at some point in my life I haven't been asked. That was asked to me in a dialogue with a prominent rabbi in Los Angeles, Rabbi David Woznica, at Stephen Weiss Temple years ago.
Yeah.
And it was a very difficult. He said, what is the single thing that makes you most happy? And I remember what I said. I said it was my wife, and but my wife is sitting here as I speak to you, ironically.
Nice.
I think it's impossible to say single because so many things, the more things that bring you joy, I'm sort of an expert on happiness. It's a complex subject, but I've written and lectured on it for decades. And many, many things bring me joy. My children bring me joy. My friends are incredibly important to my happiness. My religion is incredibly important to my happiness. So this is one of the rare occasions where I can't directly answer the question. On a day-to-day basis, I would still stick with my wife. But when I mention those other things to you, it's a sort of tied for first.
So maybe it's a very complex subject. People think it's simple. Now, I read somewhere that at 16 years old, you realized that being unhappy was taking the easy way out. And then later on, you said you have a moral obligation to be happy. So let's not talk about what makes you happy, but let's talk about why you would think that being unhappy is taking the easy way out. And I know you've said that if you act happy, you can be happy. And Carrie's reading my shirt right now. Carrie, yes. What does my shirt say?
Happiness is a choice.
Happiness is a choice, it's by Amma. Do you know who Amma is,
no,
by the way?
No.
Carrie, you don't? Okay.
I don't.
Well,
no,
she's an Indian woman who hugs people. Go ahead, Dennis.
Well, I'm sure she's a wise human being just for saying that, but I the person that I first heard say it was a choice was Abraham Lincoln. Mm-hmm. We are as happy as we decide to be. And the reason it is so significant is Lincoln had an exceedingly difficult life. A manic depressive wife. He lost his beloved son in his teenage years, and his country, which he loved, were slaughtering each other in the hundreds of thousands at a time when America had so many fewer people. So this man, if this man could say we are as happy as we decide to be, then I'll take that seriously.
You know, I have to say, the thing that made me happy was getting my ethics in, you know, making sure that I had them and stop. I guess as when I got into my early 20s, I did some things I'm not proud of. I did some things that I, you know, look back and go, why would I do that? And why did I do that? And, you know, there was a time I cheated on my boyfriend and I've never done that since. But there were things that I wasn't moral. I wasn't ethical. And as I started to get more ethical, moral, more into my religion, that like you makes me very happy. But the more my happiness quotient grew, the less lies I told, the more I was me, the happier I could be. And it's very interesting. I never looked at happiness as the more ethical you are, the happier you can be. Do you ever see it that way?
I have a whole chapter in my book on happiness, on goodness and happiness. They are intrinsically related. That's why the motto of my happiness hour, which I've been broadcasting since 1999 every single week, is the happy make the world better and the unhappy make it worse. The most you don't meet happy, cruel people. I mean, let's
so
be
true.
Honest.
Well,
so
maybe the perception of happy, but we don't know that because, you know, it's almost something that comes from within. And it's hard to judge. And this is a lot of the concepts that I think that you struggle with, Dennis, are really difficult to define. And, you know, for me, and I appreciate what both of you are saying, but one of my longtime friends, Ken Kokin, who actually went to the Brandeis Institute in Simi Valley when you were the director some like 30, 40 years ago, said that Alan Gervie isn't happy unless he isn't happy.
Ken said that about you?
Yeah.
Alan, let me recite that to my own brain. You're not happy unless you're not happy.
That's
so
right.
You're only happy when you're unhappy?
Correct.
Okay, so that...
Right.
Explain that.
You know, okay, well, actually, I did... It's one of the topics I once covered. I asked people, because I've learned so much, obviously, from listeners in the course of these decades. So I asked people, if you know somebody who is chronically unhappy, one of your children, your spouse, your parent, for example, do you think that they do not want to be happy? And many people said they don't want to be happy, that they sort of pickle their unhappiness. And I think that there is some truth to that because, among other things, if you have four children and the unhappy one is most likely to get the most attention. So there's a certain, and especially today in America, there is a reward for misery. If you're a victim, and all victims are unhappy by definition, if you see yourself as a victim, you have the highest echelon of societal status. It's sick. But it's true.
And that I run a foundation. We deal with elder abuse. People call me all the time victims. But the ones that turn out to be survivors are the ones that have the attitude of, let's fight this. It's not going to get me down. I'm going to win this. And then you find the people that we call victims who expect you to do everything for them and they blame everybody else instead of the other way around. That's very, very true. You have the victim mentality and you have the survivor mentality. And always the survivor mentality. They always come out ahead. Always.
Not always.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have to take a break. But Dennis, you know, it's interesting because I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, is someone who goes to Yale University going to be more happy than someone goes to the University of Wyoming, for instance? And I want to ask you about that because you have some interesting thoughts on some of the Ivy League schools. And I wonder if it's a rationalization because people are trying to figure out why someone would pay $500,000 to get their kid into USC when maybe their kid would be happier, maybe their kid would be more successful, and maybe you as a father, Dennis, would rather have a spouse for your child from a different school than one of these Ivy League schools. And by the way, a disclaimer here, I went to Brown University, so I'm ready to debate you on this. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Your opinions are at home here. AM 790 KABC.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, giving you a new perspective to enrich your life. Now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
All right. You know, it's funny, Karen. I'm looking at you. And when we had, who was the rapper that we had on? I don't remember. Two Milli.
Oh.
On Fortnite,
it's the guy. 2 Milli, right?
2 Milli, yeah.
2 Milli.
So we had rap music on. We have classical music on. One of the first time, even with, you know, some people like Alan Dershowitz, we had some more upbeat. But there's, I think, a reason. Let me ask. We're talking to Dennis Prager, and Dennis has introduced so many hundreds of thousands of people to classical music. What's so important to you, Dennis, about classical music that you would feel the need to share it with so many people? And you've even conducted orchestras as well, which not a lot of people can do.
Hello? Did we lose Dennis?
Sorry, I was on mute. Okay. Sorry, guys. Here
go,
I am.
Go ahead.
Wait a second. You were on mute? When has Dennis Prager been on mute?
That's correct. That's a very fair question. I acknowledge it.
Okay.
Very rarely. I must admit, very rarely. There are people who would like me to be on mute, but I rarely am. I fell in love, and that's the only way I could put it. It's sort of, you know, there's such a thing as love at first sight. I didn't do any homework in high school. And I also didn't watch TV. I was not interested in television. I was a very odd kid in a good way, I think. But I didn't march to the beat of the normal drummer. And I was interested in everything except school. And my school made one. I grew up in New York, and they made $1 seats available to shows and plays and ballets and operas and concerts. And I took all of them. And I figured, I don't know what I'll fall in love with, but for $1, what can I lose? So I would take the subway from Brooklyn to Manhattan, and I would try everything. And I tried everything. So I got $1 ticket to a classical concert at Carnegie Hall. And I went out of my mind. It was, I said, I love this. I just love this. And the next day I bought $32 worth of tickets. I gave up lunch for a couple of weeks, and I just bought more concert tickets. And it spoke to my brain and my heart, which is the two ways to touch me. I like to be touched in both. So I fell in love with it, but I fully acknowledge that, about half of let's say Americans, and we'll talk about America, half of Americans, no matter what, will not fall in love with classical music. I have made peace with that. But I think half would. And I think it's sad to deprive yourself of deep joys in life. So I have a sort of commitment to bring people this incredible joy of classical music. Which classical is an off-putting term, unfortunately. It shouldn't be. It just means music that has been enjoyed for generations. It's like, look, listen, Frank Sinatra is classical because he has transcended generations. People, young people apparently love him, or many young people anyway. And this stuff is just gorgeous. I like bringing it to people's attention. It's wonderful for your children. Every child should be given a musical instrument, but they're not anymore. And they're not even taught cursive. You know that I signed one of my books the other week after a speech to a high school student, and then I just said, "Can you read what I wrote?" And he said, "No."
Oh, that's too bad.
That's funny. You know, it's interesting because you say that you talk about things that we think are good in the world. The Los Angeles Times talked about you this way. He said, "Dennis Prager is an amazingly gifted man and a moralist whose mission in life has been crystallized to get people obsessed with what's right and wrong." I'm going to repeat it. To get people obsessed with what's right and wrong. The music is part of that, I would say. But I have... a beef with you on that. And I want to ask you about it because it was a little disconcerting when I saw it. It was a couple of few months ago. You were doing a town hall meeting in Glendale. And you had on the panel Michael Medved, who was on our show after that. Larry Elder, who's been on our show before. You had some people on. The Cowboy, of course, was on that panel. And the issue came up about President Trump as a role model. And you said to the audience that he doesn't have to be, he isn't, and that doesn't bother you. And people wildly applauded while your good buddy sitting next to you, Michael Medved, shook his head and said, no, I can't agree with a lot of the tweets. I can't condone the way that he behaves sometimes. And when Michael was on the show, he said he had dinner with you afterwards and everything was fine. But how do you reconcile your image of this great moralist with what you said about Donald Trump and not seeing him as a role model for kids and other people?
Well, I've written about this a lot. People should really look it up. They're all column long, so column size long, so there's not a lot of reading involved. But in a nutshell, I just read this very long biography of Winston Churchill that just came out, and in it, the author repeatedly notes the kind things that Churchill said about Stalin. Now, I'm not comparing, God forbid, I mean, I'm not an idiot, I'm not comparing Donald Trump to Joseph Stalin, but Joseph Stalin slaughtered 20 to 40 million people, brought communism to China, where another 80 million were killed by the communists there. He is one of the most vile humans in the history of the world. So what does that say about Churchill? It says nothing. Churchill understood that between Hitler and Stalin, we have to support Stalin, as evil as he is. And that's how I look at this. I don't believe that Donald Trump is evil, by the way. I'm pointing out that when I did support him once he got the nomination, I was opposed to his getting the nomination, and I turned out to have been wrong. I believe he's turned out to be a magnificent president. But in terms of role model for children, I can only tell you that this is a very naive notion. Who in my lifetime, when I was a child, John Kennedy was the president of the United States. Was he a role model? Was Lyndon Johnson a role model? Was Jimmy Carter a role model? I guess so. Jimmy Carter was faithful.
You have to include Clinton. You have to include Clinton, don't you? He wasn't
okay,
exactly.
Bill Clinton. You're right. Yes, that's right. So therefore, when people have awesome power, how they are personally is of. It's almost insignificant to me. And I give the example of a surgeon. If you are told, here's a surgeon, you have a rare cancer. We have a surgeon who's known to cheat on his wife, who curses repeatedly, and you know is makes silly statements on occasion. He's the best one at this surgery. On the other hand, we have a fine surgeon, not as good, who is faithful to his wife and gives charity and so on. You'll take the mean or the selfish or the unfaithful surgeon in a nanosecond. People have roles to play. The president of the United States' role is not to be a moral model to my children. I am the one who has to be a moral model to my children. Their uncles, their older cousins, their rabbis, their priests, their ministers, they have to be the moral models, not the president.
And, you know, when you talk about that, you have to think about issues too. A lot of people are stuck on issues, and then there's what you would, I guess, call the leftists who can't even look at the issues. Why can't people respect people because they think a certain way? And I want to talk, we're going to talk about your movie that'll be coming out. But I want to talk about what goes on university campuses, free speech, that and the safe places. But Wouldn't you agree that people have to focus on issues rather than necessarily behavior and respect others if they have a different opinion on the issues, regardless of whether it's President Trump or Bernie Sanders? Boy, I'm silencing Dennis.
I think he muted himself again.
Dennis! All right, we're going to take a break. We're not sure if he's muted or if he got cut off or whether he was just blown away with that question. I'm not sure, but we're going to find out after the break. You're listening to Gurvey's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
You've heard of Murphy's Law, but have you heard of Gurvey's Law? Anything that can go wrong can be made right. Now, here are your hosts, Carrie Kasem and Alan Gurvey.
Yes, we are back. We are talking to Dennis Prager, who before the show was known as the calmest voice in radio, and today it is the quietest, most silent voice in radio.
Or muted.
Muted voice in radio. Before the break, Dennis, I had this really profound question, and then there was silence. Did you hear the question, or were you muted?
I did. You know, it's very interesting, by the way. On my show, it happens, I would say about a quarter of the time I'm interviewing somebody, and I rarely do a whole hour with somebody. So certainly if it's a whole hour, it's more than a quarter of the time. It's a sad fact that American, and I'm a big fan of America, but American cable providers or phone services are not on the level of many other places in the world. And these failures should just not be happening in the year 2019.
It's incredible that you say that because I experience it every day. I live in Calabasas, and every time I'm going home, there's a section from
through. Exactly. Like, don't they know it?
And it's like I talk to my mom, every day on my way home from work, and it cuts out the same time. And my mom, at her, I'm not going to say later years, but she's well into her 80s. She would hate for me to say that because she says she looks like she's in her 70s, but says to me all the time, why do we have to get cut off when we're talking? Why? So I totally agree with you. We'll leave that for the technical people to fix because it really needs to. You're the deep thinker. I don't know that you have that ability to fix. And maybe it's just a business thing. Maybe, that's a way for telecommunications companies to make more money. I don't know, because that's sometimes what happens. I want to move on to something much more simple. That's a complicated issue, Dennis, but here's something simple. I read with interest your longtime radio producer, Alan Estrin, who apparently didn't believe in God at some point. And when you introduced him to a logical reason to believe in God, he was a changed man. And I'm just curious. I need to hear it. What was the logical reason that you gave Alan Estrin that turned his life around?
I don't know which one, because I give quite a number, but there's one unanswerable. Why is there anything? Mm-hmm. Science will never, ever, ever, ever answer. It cannot answer it. There are things that religion cannot explain. There are things that science cannot explain. Religion cannot explain. Obviously, it doesn't explain how cancer cells mutate. I mean, obviously, or metastasize. That's not religion's province. But science cannot explain the ultimate questions. Science cannot explain what is good or evil, the most important question in life. Science cannot explain why is there anything? Why does anything exist, let alone how we went from inorganic to organic, from inorganic to Beethoven? I mean, the idea that it happened on its own is to me so utterly preposterous. I asked Charles Krauthammer, the late, great Charles Krauthammer, who was an agnostic, completely secular man, agnostic. I said, what do you think of atheism? And I had no idea what he would say. And he said, I can't think of a stupider idea that I've ever encountered in my life than atheism. The idea that everything came about on its own is just idiotic. So I don't know if that was the argument that did it. There were many others as well. But that to me is literally unanswerable. We religious people have tough ones, too. Well, we have one tough one. If God is good, why is there so much unjust suffering?
Right.
And I admit that. I admit that. But atheists don't admit that they can't answer my question. I admit that I can't answer that question. That's there's an unanswerable for the religious community. I acknowledge that.
How do you see God? Is this one person? Is this the universe? Is this? I know so many people see God as different
Correct.
Things.
So here, I write about that in my the biggest work of my life, the five volumes I'm writing called The Rational Bible, mm-hmm. explaining the Bible rationally. And the second volume is coming out in a month. The first volume is Exodus. The second will be Genesis. And I explain that people use the word God, but it's meaningless. If a person says to me, I believe in God, I know nothing about them, and I know nothing about the God they believe in. So I will be very precise. I believe in the God of the Bible, specifically the God, if you will, of Genesis and Exodus, the God who created the world, who has a moral will, who judges people, and who revealed the Ten Commandments. If you do not believe in that, Benjamin Franklin believed in that God, and he was not a normative Christian. Every founder believed in that God. Not all believed in Christ, but all believed in that God. And that is the God that I believe in. I don't have a new definition. The universe is not God because God created the universe. You can't be what you created.
You know, when you think about your past, you grew up more religious than you are now. You say you're religious, but of course...
No. I grew up more observant, not more religious.
Okay, well, more observant. So let's use the word observant. Now, what I have seen and read, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that there are certain laws of Judaism that you follow. Let's say on Shabbos, on Shabbat, whether you're driving to shul or using the telephone, but won't use the computer or watch TV. These are inconsistencies that I have an issue with, not with you, because I'm the same way, but my wife has an issue with it. She can't understand how a Jew can eat kosher inside the home, but not outside the home. You have picked and chosen certain rules to live by that could be considered observant or partly observant or religious or have a basis for them, yet you have rejected others. Is it because it's too difficult in life? That's sometimes what I would say. When I was at a yeshiva in Israel and the rabbi said to me, we want you to be a rabbi. And I said, I can't do it. And they said, why can't you do it? And I said, because I've got to watch football on Saturday. Not the greatest answer. They didn't like
it. Did you really?
I did. So, Dennis, tell me, are you inconsistent or is there some rhyme to your reason?
And I bet you he heard that entire question, and he's talking right now.
That was one of the best questions of my five-year career.
Actually,
here.
That was a good one. Did you really tell them that?
Yes,
that
I did.
That you have to. How old were you?
I was 25 years old, 26. All right, where is he? Anyone going to find Dennis Prager?
There we go. It's the beautiful telecom. Oh, now he's off.
Now he's gone. He says, I don't know what happened.
And then he goes, God.
Divine intervention.
It was the wrong God. Maybe he's now realizing it's not the God of Genesis.
God did not like.
Wait a sec.
They did not want him.
Wrong one.
The Genesis.
Listen, I heard your whole question.
I told you.
There is a God. There is
bet.
A God.
I should have bet on that one.
All right, so the answer is there is rhyme to my reason. Yes, that is exactly right. First of all, I try to observe the Torah laws. I think they're from God. I think the first five books are from God. So I'm atypical of non-Orthodox Jews in that I do believe the Torah is from God. But there are rabbinic laws or oral laws that I do pick and choose among. That is correct. But it's not because of ease. I'll give you a little time. I mean, I can give you any number of examples. I fast on Yom Kippur. It's not easy. I don't smoke my beloved cigar, which I smoke every day of the week, but I don't smoke it on the Sabbath because it says do not light a fire on the Sabbath in the Torah. So the issue has never been ease. look, you quoted me at the beginning when I was 16. I said, I have to be happy because it's too easy to be unhappy. I've tried never to take the easy way out. I try to do what is right and not what is easy. Yeah, you don't have kids if you want an easy life. You don't take on a major work that is extremely difficult, like writing a 5-volume, a million word commentary on the Torah or on the Bible because it's easy. So it's not been easy, but I do divide between a Torah law and non-Torah law. So that is, in a nutshell, for your non-Jewish listeners, I hope that this is clear. But that is the way I work it through. And the irony is, I probably brought more Jews to Orthodox Judaism than any Orthodox Jew living today. And here's another irony: I probably brought more non-Jews to Christianity than perhaps any pastor living today.
You know, maybe it's because of the apparent contradictions. People are not perfect, and you've said that. You don't think that people are wonderful necessarily. But when you talk about contradictions, from religion, we talk about marriage. You have said that marriage is ideal, and I happen to agree with it, yet you've been divorced 2 times. So how do you reconcile that?
There's nothing to reconcile. The divorce is the ideal. And but if it, and I gave it my my all. I tried very hard. My first marriage. Oh, I said divorce is the ideal. I'm sorry. Marriage is the ideal.
I hear your wife. That's so cute.
We love her.
That's so awesome. I love it.
You would love her. That's why I do all these things in her presence. I would be a failure without her. But anyway,
go ahead.
So It's somewhat like, to me, the question is sort of like, is driving the ideal? Yes. So, but you've been in 2 big car crashes. Why do you continue to drive? Because that's the best way in which to get around. The fact that two marriages crashed, as it were, nobody, you know, obviously I'm not going to, it's one of the only things that I don't talk about publicly because it's not right to the 2 women involved. I can only say I gave it my all, and it didn't work out. I will say this, whatever I learned from one of them has passed away, but both of them would have said I was a wonderful husband. That I know because they said so. And sometimes marriages don't work out. There are people who are terrific parents, and sometimes their kid doesn't work out. And Judaism has never opposed a divorce. You know, it's not Catholicism or where in, you know, except in case of infidelity or perhaps dropping belief in the religion, it is allowable. And I'm not knocking Catholicism, merely stating a difference that exists. But so I wish that I had 1 marriage. I do. Listen, my wife was a single mother when I met her. She is the first to say that the ideal is to be a married mother. But to preach an ideal, but not have your life be able to meet it. The issue to me is, what do people preach an ideal? Not have they failed at it. People fail at a lot of ideals.
Yeah.
But if you drop the ideal, we're screwed.
And when you say your wife was a single mother, you should include, to give her props, raising 2 nieces after the death of her sister and an autistic child. I mean, that's really, how can you not love someone where that heart has to be so big that you can't get around it?
Well, it's the non-autistic who's really difficult. He just walked in the room.
That's oh, my God.
There you go.
I'm like, where's he going with this?
That's wonderful. It really is wonderful. We got to take a quick break.
He really gets credit. It's him.
There you go. You know, sense of humor gets through a lot of things. And
without it, you're doomed.
You're doomed.
Yes. Yes.
Dennis, we have 1 more segment. We want to talk about PragerU. We want to talk about your book series, Rational Bible, Exodus, and then the new Genesis coming out. And of course, your project with Adam Carolla, No Safe Spaces. We got to do that in the last segment. So you're going to have to think quickly, talk fast, and not be as calm as you usually are.
And hopefully the telephone will be working.
You're listening to Gervie's Law.
The other parts I can handle. That beats me, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, we're going to be back after this. You listen to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, lifting Murphy's Law to the highest level on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Wait, I thought you were going to play Fiddler on the Roof or something.
What?
Okay.
I guess. Was there... I'm still
Dennis Prager.
I'm scratching my head.
You're still there. We have one more segment, and I told you you got to talk quickly because we got a lot to cover in the last segment. He's been called one of the most interesting minds in America's Jewish life, probably in life in general. We want to talk about No Safe Spaces, the project you're doing with Adam Carolla. Tell us quickly when we can expect to see it, because the teaser or the trailer, so to speak, teaser is really funny and really poignant, and you can find that on the internet. No Safe Spaces with Dennis Prager and Adam Carolla.
It's coming out later in the year. I don't know the exact date. I'm not sure that they know the exact date. It's hopefully will open up in 1,000 to 2,000 theaters. And it is exactly as you described. Look, anything with Adam Carolla will be funny. I think he's uniquely gifted, both in wisdom and in humor. And we're a wonderful team. We really we're great. It's great chemistry. Very different backgrounds, but a part of the appeal is how utterly different our backgrounds are. And we're going to open the eyes of the country up to what is happening at universities. That you know, the No Safe Spaces term is about this truly foolish and I think. A hurtful thing that if you don't agree with a speaker who comes to a campus, you, a college student, someone between, let's say, 18 and 22, can go to a safe space and play with Play-Doh, stuffed animals, get hot chocolate, and watch videos of frolicking puppies. I'm serious. This is exactly what
this has got to be a joke. This has got to be a joke. Is this for special type students?
No. It's for anyone who doesn't agree with a conservative speaker. It's just, you look it up. Look, safe spaces on campuses. Take a look.
What kid is going to go do that? I mean, unless they're like taking the, you know, I'm sorry. Unless they're going there for the hot chocolate, free hot chocolate, these people can't be serious. You got to have something emotionally wrong with you. I'm sorry.
I think we're talking about free speech here.
Even if you're going just for free hot chocolate, there's something wrong with you.
Well, it's more about the free speech. What's good for some have to be good for others. You know, I guess if we had another hour, we could talk about free speech versus hate speech. But I think what you're talking about, Dennis, is free speech for all. Not just for people in university who happen to think a certain way. And quickly, I did tease before, you have a very interesting article about University of Wyoming versus Yale University. In a minute, summarize why you think it's ludicrous for people to get so excited about getting their kids into one of these supposed good schools.
Because it means that they have what I believe is a distorted value system. The 99% of what matters with your child is their character. That is everything. What will determine their future is not whether they go to Yale. What determines their future is whether they're a decent person, is their character. And very few parents emphasize character as much as they do grades. And there is no relationship between good grades and good character. You can have great character and great grades. I'm not a fool. I recognize that, but they're not related. That's all. Look at the video that I linked to in my article about students at Yale gathering around a professor, a liberal professor, one might add, and cursing him because they didn't like an article that his wife wrote. That it doesn't matter what Halloween costume you wear.
Yeah.
I'm still confused. I'm sorry. Let's just real quick. Give me 30 seconds. Hold on. So you have the stuffed animals. You have the special room. You've got the TV on. You have the puppies. Why not kittens, first of all? But what happens when the socialist speaker, the leftist speaker gets up there and the conservative kids don't agree? Do they have a little safe space as well?
No, because we don't need one. Every conservative kid has been completely exposed just by breathing to left-wing thought.
Yeah.
It is not possible not to be exposed to it. So they it doesn't ruin their day.
Right. And you're still talking to me. I went to Brown University, and we're not going to talk about what the students passed on BDS last week, because that probably was, at least the administration was smart enough to not follow it. That's for another time. But let me ask you something, Dennis. If people can't get into Yale U University, can they get into PragerU, and what do they expect to get from PragerU?
Well, I'll just tell you this. Bill Bennett, the former drug czar, his kid went to Princeton, and he said to me he learned more at Prager University than he did at Princeton University, and I believe that to be true. We don't teach physics or chemistry or math, obviously, but about life and about history and about values and about what matters in life and common sense. This is all free. There are 400 5-minute videos and my fireside chats and Will Witt going to campuses and interviewing people. We had 1 billion views last year, that's a B.
That's amazing. And
it's around the world, I might add. I lectured last summer to 1,500 young people in Romania who watch our videos.
Right. And the Happiness Hour, something that you do, that's something that is extremely popular. How do people get to PragerU? Because do they have to pay you off to get there?
I wish they did. I would, if everybody you watch gave me a dollar, I would really be living well. But no, it's completely free. You just go to PragerU or PragerUniversity.com. And I just want to mention, too, that if people want answers to life, I think I provide that in my books, The Rational Bible, which will ultimately be 5 volumes. The second volume is coming out in a month. But I, if people have dismissed the Bible because they were taught that religion is for fools, this will change their mind.
And that's something that's probably sorely needed in our society, as you have commented that the Bible and religion has fallen by the wayside in many areas. And the Rational Bible, Exodus, the first edition, and then Genesis that's coming out, provides a different perspective.
Yeah, and it answers a lot of questions, like why you have to honor your parents, but you don't have to love them.
And, you know, this is a good point to end off, because I've read this before, how you can appreciate and be thankful for parents. You had wonderful parents. I did. Carrie has often talked about her father, Casey Kasem. It's really wonderful when you can honor them and be proud of them.
True.
That's right. But even if you're not proud of them, you still have to honor them. It doesn't come with an asterisk.
Right.
You treat your parents properly because they're your parents, not because you love them, not because you admire them, but because they're your parents. There's a belief in hierarchy in the Bible that the left is destroying. A parent child and teacher student are two examples of a hierarchy that we have destroyed at our peril.
Or hardworking people and successful people. You know, back when you used to say, oh, look, there's Mr. Whatever. He runs the factory and people looked up to him. Now you say somebody's rich and successful and they look down upon them. And it's unbelievable to me.
Well, let's not look down upon anyone. We have really enjoyed this hour with you, Dennis Prager. We have to stop here.
Let me tell you guys, you do a very, very good job. And I say this with a lot longer in radio than you. And I don't say it all the time. So I just want you to know that.
Thank you.
We really appreciate that. And we appreciate the time. And hopefully we can do it again. And Carrie owes you a fountain pen.
I do. And I'll come bring it to you. I really will.
That's the deal. Or bring your boyfriend. I'll check him out.
Okay. Well, okay.
There you go.
All right.
He didn't go to Yale, so you're good. Thanks for listening to Gervie's Law. Thanks to Dennis Prager, Carrie Kasem. Have a great week.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.